Happy Friday. It is September 11th, and we are talking politics as usual. I do want to recognize that tomorrow is the 20th anniversary of 9/11. Kind of tough to believe that we are 20 years out. Sometimes it seems like forever ago, and sometimes it seems like just yesterday. Joining us today, Greg Hughes in the house, and we have a new face and friend in here, David Ibarra. And David, before we get chatting about all of the issues of the day, tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do for people that don't know.
Well, I'm a business owner in Salt Lake City. I have several businesses here in the United States and several abroad. I have lived downtown for 21 years. I love downtown, or I used to, and I walk at night. Well, I used to. Now I have to walk during the day because it's not safe.
Okay, so we're going to get to the issues of why it's not safe coming up a little bit in the podcast. I figure since we have Greg and David here, who both care a lot about the homelessness issue and where it's going, why we need to care, and maybe what changes need to happen, we'll get to that. I want to get back, though, before we get to the issues of the day of September 11th. David, you first. Like, what are your thoughts? Because I think that when we get 20 years out, you think that everything would be less emotional. But I feel like as we relive and talk to some of these people who were some of the rescuers, it feels just as raw and real as it did 20 years ago.
Well, you know, first of all, I don't think there's any of us that don't know exactly what we were doing at that exact moment. I was given a presentation in the East, and the first plane hit, and we stopped and were shook, and then decided to continue. The CEO of Protective Life said, well, let's just continue. And then the second one hit, and we realized that, you know, America was under attack and all things would change. And I believe that it has changed since that time. We're not the same. And I tell you, you just pause in shock that how could have this happened? And we got to deal with the aftermath, but the sadness of it all it will affect us forever.
Absolutely. And the strange thing is that all of our kids that are in K through 12 right now, they were born after it happened. Right. And so they're learning it from their history books, which is an interesting thing, Greg.
Yeah, you know, I remember where I was too. And I was with a friend, a lifelong friend. We both grew up together, and we were playing Hobble Creek's golf course early in the morning, just 9 holes, getting it in. My friend got a call from his wife on the last hole we were hitting, and it was odd to hear him get a call at that time of morning. And she described it vaguely, but I wasn't sure. So we were just finishing up when that call came.
It was something that our minds didn't jump to.
I wasn't registering. Yeah. So I walk in the clubhouse and I see this building that's on fire. And I ask the pro, I said, what building is that? And he says, it's the World Trade Center. And I said, the Twin Towers? He said, yeah. And I said, where's the other one? He said, it fell. And I remember thinking, it fell? I had just flown weeks earlier through Newark and saw the observation window of the Twin Towers. And just no sooner than he said that, and I'm trying to get my head around what he just said, I saw the second one start to collapse. My sister lives in Pittsburgh. They had stopped people being able to get into the city. Her son was at daycare, and she was unable to reach him. We sat and watched the television the rest of the night. It was one of those surreal moments. And you thought back then, if you think back, we didn't think that was the end of it. We thought that this, at least I thought this was, we're going to see more of this.
Just the beginning. Yeah. And that was the scary part.
Yeah. And so, you know, there's been, we can in hindsight look at our Department of Homeland Security. Yeah. We can look at the Patriot Act and have we infringed on people's civil liberties? I think we have, sadly. But what do you do in those moments? And you know, I'm just glad that we didn't see a succession of terrible attacks. The one we saw on 9/11 happened after that.
You know, and we did see some that occurred right after.
That's true.
There was a series of others, and those of us that were, I was traveling, and then to have for the first time in my life that all of a sudden the skies were empty, and you couldn't travel. And I remember hustling back to the hotel. Can I get back in here and spending the week and waiting for the skies? And to wait for, I remember my brother was flying from Boston. Wow. And then the wondering, you know, were your loved ones okay that were in the sky? Because we were all worried about what was going to occur at that time.
It was a scary time. Yeah. I even remember flying on the one-year anniversary. I went with the family of Brady Howell, who died at the Pentagon, back to Washington, D.C., and I flew by myself. And I just remember being so nervous because finally people were starting to fly again, but it was the first time the red, I think it was what they called red terror level was alert. You get to Washington, D.C., you'd never seen it before, where there were literally armed military patrolling the streets. There was tanks on the corners, anti-missile defense system. It just, it seemed like you were in a different place, a different country. The one thing I do miss, though, afterwards, after we got through the very scariest part, is I feel like we were a unified country. We were all Americans. We were in this together.
Absolutely.
And we've lost that. And that's what makes me so sad right now, because we feel like a country divided right now on so many issues.
I
feel like it.
I know. I know.
We are.
And the thing is I want to talk about important issues. So I go on social media to talk about these important issues, but it still feels so terrible that I revert to just putting like a seal hugging like a swimmer or something, just because I don't want to talk about it. It just like is so nasty. So that's why we're here today. We're going to talk about tough issues.
So nasty. And so with that, on that note, let's get nasty.
I don't want to get nasty. What I like about this room is that we can talk tough topics. We can disagree with each other and I think leave friends.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because when I was filling Mara's spot today, I actually asked Greg, because I called a couple people, and finding people who are free on a Friday afternoon.
And they're saying,
Hughes,
no way. No way.
People are busy, but I said, Greg, name me off a few Democrats you'd like to hang out with that would be fun. And Greg can easily spit out a few people that he's friends with, and I should give a call. So, David,
okay, let's first, you're going to ruin my street cred. Second, there's just not that many. I do have a few that, you know, we can agree to disagree, but we're... There's a deep amount of respect for each other.
See, I like that, and that's what we need more of in our country. So thank you both of you for being here to talk to today. I think the biggest issue right now, and it will be for days, weeks, and months to come, is President Biden's announcement yesterday that there would be a vaccine mandate. This comes 2 months after he declared the nation's independence from the virus. You know, let's burn our masks. Yeah. You've had your vaccine. You're free. And I think there was this excitement. You know, everyone lets out a deep sigh and a breath, and we're like, okay, we're heading in the right direction. Case counts are extremely high right now, but now we're caught in the middle of so many questions. He says employers with 100-plus employees, we're talking about private businesses, are going to be forced to vaccinate, or you can get tested on a weekly basis. That'll affect 80 million people, all healthcare facilities, all federal employees and contractors, and they have no test-out option. That's the difference there. And if you violate it, it's $14,000 a person. When you first heard this, David, did you think, are there going to be any legal issues? Will states challenge this, or what's going to happen?
Of course. I'm glad you let me go first, because once you get started, you normally can't quiet him down.
So David,
he'll have his turn. Mute
him for just a moment. You know, of course, you know that we're divided, and it's like one ball gets put into motion, and now we're going to see what happens back. What to me is sad is that we've had to come to this point that we're so divided in not talking about the wellness or protection of people that we're having to come out with extreme measures on both parts. I happen to like the carrot better than the stick. I would have preferred having a 50% surcharge on every single individual that chooses not to get vaccinated in their health insurance. If a smoker can get a surcharge, why can't somebody who's taking up the room of the intensive care? When we look at the doctors, we looked at the nurses that can't take anymore and are wore out, drastic measures are having to be taken. I don't like this one. I understand it. But what I do like is just one of the things that I like about this guy sitting right next to me. We won't agree on everything that we do, but one of the things that I like about him, he'll put an act into motion to make a difference. And I'll put an act into motion to make a difference. I don't happen to like this one. I don't like employers being deputized to enforce laws. But we've done it in other things. We do it on immigration. We do it on a lot of things. But I understand the president happened to do this. I think it's critical. I think that our intensive care facilities can't take anymore. Our doctors can't take anymore. It's sad that we're divided as a country and we can't do it in harmony and unity on our own. But something needed to be done. I would have preferred it to be something else.
Is it okay, though? I mean, there's most people who take the vaccine are going to be okay. There are going to be people who have side effects. And I've talked to some of those people. So where there's risk, a lot of people say there should be choice. Are we taking away that choice in a country that proclaims freedom and choice and the ability to do that, or are there times where there shouldn't be choice?
Well, I think that we are to a time we need to do something different. I don't like the action that we've taken. I understand it. I'm not so sure as if I was, which I would never want to be, president of the United States, that I wouldn't have chose a different direction. I prefer a carrot, 50% surcharge on insurance, and I'll tell you what, a whole lot of people would have got vaccinated.
Look, here's.
Is it your turn yet?
I was been waiting forever here, man. I've been waiting, and I've been waiting. Then Heidi went, and it's like, I'm not going to get a turn here unless it's like, no one's like giving it to me. No one's handing the ball off.
Here's your chance. So
here we go.
So talk to me about this. Were you surprised by President Biden's announcement yesterday?
I don't know that anything that Biden's doing lately is surprising me, sadly. It just seems to be an overreach that you're going to have to get the courts involved and see if the separation of powers are being honored. And you're going to, and I think this will get settled in the courts. And I don't think that what he's doing will stand legal muster. I think that he's gone too far. I think, David, one of the issues that a lot of Americans have is that when you're talking about a medical procedure, and it should be easy for Democrats or people that find themselves on the abortion issue pro-choice, when we talk about the personal nature of a medical procedure and an individual's right to choose, I think there is something that elevates beyond other restrictions or requirements that an employer may impose or
like,
someone else.
Like mass deaths?
Of it. I'll just say this. When this thing started, one of the things that the Utah legislature did in a special session, given that we didn't have our arms around this pandemic and what it is and how it would impact people, is that we put broad immunity from liability for businesses and for institutions of higher learning, so that if you went somewhere and you got COVID and you had complications and you were to be permanently disabled, temporarily disabled, or killed, you couldn't litigate or sue the place that you had gone to if that's where you got it. Same with employees that were working. If people were working in an atmosphere and they got it, they couldn't go after their employer. So it was requested by business that there be some shield from liability. Now, I would argue that if we want now government or these businesses or institutions to now require medical procedures, then that shield of liability shouldn't be there as well. But I think if you want to get into this space, if you're going to start deciding to protect them, you shouldn't enjoy the government's shield of all liability. You should get into that. And I think we're just still in this global clinical trial where I think people are making reasonable choices.
But absolute is never absolute. When we talk about shielding employers, and I'm an employer, I have multiple companies.
Right.
But when we have employers that are requiring people to work shoulder to shoulder with no care at all, whether it's a Tyson's, well, I better not be saying names, whether it's a chicken factory is that absolute's never good. You've got to have reasonable reaction for the protection of our talent. And that's a whole different subject.
But to the point of reasonable, I will
to the point of reasonable.
I will never understand, and no one can explain to me why immunity versus those that are not immune versus vaccinated versus those that are not, because there is plenty of science out there now, and there's plenty of data now that shows if you get COVID and your body creates natural antibodies, you can test for those. I've been testing myself every single month since the CDC said this is only going to last you for 90 days, then you got to get vaccinated. Since that 90 days was over, every month I get tested to see if I have antibodies. If I can show you that through natural immunity that I'm safe, then I should be able to present that. But we don't talk about this in terms of immunity versus those that are not immune. We talk vaccinated versus not vaccinated. And I think that is where I think
people
get frustrated.
It is strange to me that we're not talking about herd immunity in the sense that we always have, where you get to immunity.
Or there's a strength to the natural immunity as well.
Yeah, you get it.
They're finding that the Delta breakthroughs are happening more than the natural.
But the part that to me is alarming and the part that is unacceptable is we've turned it into a political football game. And it shouldn't be. We should be looking at having some conversations and being able to have some, if something shows that, yes, what you just explained is
right,
fine, let's do it. But instead, we've turned it into them against us, and that isn't going to help America in any way.
I agree with David, but I will say this. If you look at and I've said this in past shows, what candidate Joe Biden, when he was running for president, we had Operation Warp Speed. We knew that there were vaccines and research going that would come to market at some time in the near future. They didn't know when.
Right.
And the question in a debate was posed to President or to candidate Joe Biden: if you're president and Operation Warp Speed produces these vaccines, are you going to take it?
He said no, I think, didn't he?
He was hesitant, but he said, but he qualified it. He said, if it's a transparent process, if this has been fully vetted by the medical as well as scientific community, then I would have confidence in it and I would do it. The frustration that many feel is that there is a censorship on social media. They do it, I think, sometimes with the best of intentions. I don't want to create vaccine hesitancy.
Thank heavens.
But I'm telling you that if you don't let the full vetting of different studies, Cleveland Clinic did a study, and then they had to apologize for doing the study because they showed that natural immunity was strong, but then they said, oh, you're going to create vaccine hesitancy. If it feels like you're, if America, the American people feel like information is being hidden from them, that's what raises the suspicion. And it doesn't help.
I think you and I would both agree good studies should be available
correct.
To everyone.
Absolutely.
But how in the world do you get the hearsay studies or the bizarre
but it ain't these fact checkers. You got these kids that are on social media places. So you got these fact checkers, though, David, that they don't know their head from a hole in the ground. They're the ones that are deciding what's efficacious.
Well, it's kind of like cable
problem.
News.
Yeah.
Whether it's this side or that side.
And I think one of the problems is that sometimes there is, you know, there's so many studies getting shared online that instead of talking about them, I think we should treat, you know, all of us like adults here in the United States of America and give people information. The problem is that you can't ask about herd immunity by the normal sense by talking about people who get the virus in the wild or who get it through the vaccine. You're not allowed to talk about breakthrough cases. I'm starting to hear more of it, but if you could just talk facts and say, here are the numbers, this is what's happening, and treat everyone like the adults that we are, and have a conversation, I think it could take away a lot of the hesitancy because people wouldn't feel like there was information being hidden from them.
I love this. Now you're talking about like having real history.
Right?
So David, walk me through this one.
Racial history in America. We're adult enough to handle whatever we did.
Exactly. You know, if you don't know your history, you're doomed to repeat it. Let me ask you this. Some of the vaccine hesitant communities, it's not all Trump voters, by the way. Everybody thinks that everybody that doesn't want a vaccine is a Trump voter. We have minority
Trump was one of the first to get the vaccine.
I know.
We
have minority communities that through culture or through Tuskegee, whatever it is, there are people in this country that have been hesitant to get the vaccine. Is it fair if you have a demographic of people that are not vaccinated that you would charge more on their paycheck or do more that would hinder them in their household income if they're not well off, if they're the working
would
class?
Would it be fair that
those
if
are things we got to navigate
the non-vaccinated
too?
are 98% of the intensive care users, would it, like a smoker or anybody else, would it not be fair to charge them extra for their insurance?
So, I think that would be a better way to go. And I like that. Delta Airlines says we're going to take $200 out of your paycheck if you're not doing this. I think that could disproportionately harm poor working class people in ways that's just fundamentally not fair.
Well,
and I worry about that.
We could come out with the what not the buts on everything we talk about.
You're right.
And the one of the things
they're
I always
doing
like
it,
about
you—that's what drives me crazy.
You never did that.
Yeah.
And if you felt like it was the right thing to do,
right.
You got to take the buts.
And absolutely. The problem with the surcharges is you'd have to look at all the choices we make. Does that mean you charge someone more who ends up in the hospital who didn't wear their seatbelt? Do you charge them more if all they eat is hamburgers and french fries and they drink too much soda and they had a heart attack?
I like that.
You know, there's so many life decisions.
That's not such a bad idea. Are you
sure
you're not in business?
From the healthy guy. This guy doesn't drink soda. Of course you want to charge it. That's just unfair. Look at you. You're just a physical specimen. You can't hold us all to David Ibarra's world.
Why shouldn't we take care of the vessel in which our soul lives?
I agree.
It is true.
Last on this topic, for me at least, and you guys keep till going, I think it would be a much more responsible approach, and I think you'd have less hesitancy if we could identify and talk amongst each other who the real... There are some demographics of people that are more at risk than others. I have a sister. She smokes more than a pack a day.
Yeah.
She was saying to me, I'm not so sure about this whole vaccine thing. And I said, Mandy, you gave up health and wellness decades ago when you started smoking. It's a respiratory virus. You've got to get that vaccine right away. Yep. If you're older, I mean, there are vulnerable populations that we should be making sure we're drilling down and making sure people are safe. I think you should screen. I've never seen this one size fits all for medical procedures. Screen people. If they have the presence of the antibody, and antibodies are rare or scarce, and we got to make sure everyone gets them, Let's screen why? Before vaccine.
Why
How about
does
that?
Common sense seem so odd?
I know. Well, I thank you.
You
I know.
An absolute is just not is not the way to go.
That's where
we've got ourselves in this situation. How we're going to get out is not going to be pretty, because we're going to use it to divide us instead of talk about studies, instead of talk about the vulnerable groups, instead of talking about how to handle the costs. But what we're not talking is about the doctors and nurses that simply can't take anymore.
Yep.
And we got to care.
We do have to care. And I like to believe that, I want to say both sides, but all sides, because I think there's more than just two sides and everything. But I think people care.
No, there's just mine and his.
We just come from different realities.
Dave and
realities.
I can work this whole thing out and you don't know the truth of
We've
it.
We've all had different experiences that lead us to how we believe. So I That's think right. we really have to listen right. to people with respect. Right now, the death penalty is a big topic of conversation again. And that happened this week because Utah County Attorney David Lovett announced on Wednesday that he will no longer seek the death penalty. There's one family who has a case right now going through, a couple teenagers who were murdered, and now they don't have that. Greg, I'll let you start on this one. Does he have the right and ability? Is he starting an important conversation? What's your gut reaction when you hear this from the prosecutor in Utah County?
So I don't think it's within. I it's disappointing to hear that prejudge before any circumstances are brought to the table on capital punishment offenses, that he has already taken that off the table. Law enforcement has described to me that just the prospect of the death penalty in certain cases will get a plea where the information and closure can happen, because the death penalty isn't done, but because it's out there, they've been able to land on what happened to the victim or something like that.
So it doesn't stop them from committing the crime, but they might say, here's where the body
correct.
Is
the
or
fact
provide
that it's
closure.
In, oh, arrow in the quiver, there it can in cases, and this is what law enforcement tells me, it can motivate someone to really let someone know what really happened to avoid a penalty like that. If you are in Utah County and you know that there is no prospect of that at all, what's your motivation to maybe plea something like that down? Now, having said that, it may surprise some people, but I'm not the biggest fan of the death penalty. I'm not all that cool with the government executing the citizenry. I think government makes mistakes on a lot of
DNA
levels.
DNA has showed us that.
And
yeah.
so I'm not as, and I don't like sentencing hearings, because once you've determined someone's guilty, then you have this bizarre, only in capital offense charges where death penalties, you know, being decided upon. Yeah. The jury has to decide whether they already decide they're guilty. Now, have they connected enough that they don't want them to see them executed? Or do they have a parent, an ecclesiastical leader, as a family member that's begging for their child's life, and its heart, it moves them enough that they're willing to not give the death penalty to one person, but another person they are willing to see put to death.
And they have to live with those decisions too, yeah.
And honestly, that's not even based on the crime. That's based on who the jury's connecting with. I just think it's weird. I don't like the death penalty per se. But I will tell you this. A county attorney that just sits and says, it doesn't exist in my world. Yeah. It's artificial, and it doesn't. And it's sad that he did that, because I think it undermines a broader discussion we ought to be having about death penalty.
So should the legislature take it up? I know they took it up in 2016 and 2018. It looks like they're going to tackle it in 2022. Is there the willpower to go after it right now?
Is this my turn?
I'm going to let him answer.
I would just answer it technically, because I know that I can feel your look, okay? Technically, Representative Lowry Snow from Washington County, used to be the president of Utah State Bar, a thoughtful attorney. I used to call him one of the House's white hairs. He's a good man, a good leader. He's filed the bill to get rid of the death penalty, but put some other charges in there that hopefully would compel defendants, if they were to plea out, would be motivated to tell what really happened. So it had legs when I was in the legislature, when I served as speaker. It passed in the Senate. We didn't even have a vote on it on the floor. We didn't have the support for it. But that effort in the upcoming session is going to happen. We'll see whether it has legs or not.
Yeah. Should this be a conversation that we're having here in the state of Utah?
Well, let me just say this. I'm going to go in a little different direction, if I may.
Yes.
My niece, Kendra Isaacson, was killed in a drive-by shooting in Kearns some time ago. And her daughter, Angel, is 19, was just on one of the news programs and interviewed that the young man that killed Kendra, and she died in the arms of my other niece.
Wow.
How do you respond to vengeance? And is it a good motion? It's an emotion I frankly don't want to be in charge of. I know how I feel about that young man who's up for parole. But then I heard her interviewed. And she, and when they asked her what she thought should happen to the man who killed her mother, she says, I'd want to know whether he's sorry. I'd want to know whether he has repented to himself. And it hurt his life and his family's life and mine forever. And I think if we lose that, and I don't want to be the one that's making the decision about a life or death. I think that's God's role. It's not mine. And so I'm conflicted. I know how I felt at the moment, and I know how I would have reacted in my neighborhood, but that's wrong too. And I just don't think, think we gain anything from as a society when we go after revenge in that kind of a fashion for me.
Yeah. And it cost, one of the things that Utah County Attorney David Levitt brought up is that it costs so much money. And I don't know if, money is a factor. I guess money's a factor in everything, but it costs a lot of money with all the appeals and going through the court process, and it's never ending. And there's definitely different attorneys you have to use when it's a death penalty case. There's just a lot more that goes into it. And he talks about the fact, that sometimes they do get it wrong. And so it's definitely something that I think we need to talk about. Well, whether he went about it in the right way is a question that I don't know. But
sometimes to me, there's something worse than death. And that's to live a life that isn't a quality life. And that's the conversation that I'd rather have, is what do you do with somebody that's committed a heinous act? And it certainly shouldn't get the conversations of a quality of life. It's lockup to me and probably by yourself.
I've said put them in pink jumpsuits and make them break rocks till the end of the day and then go meet your maker. Yeah. But maybe that's a little harsh. The problem with the county attorney in Utah County, David Levitt, doing it unilaterally on his own, I don't believe that's his jurisdiction. I don't think it's his decision to make that way, and I think it undermines law enforcement and hurts the very issue that he's. Yeah.
We need to tackle this as a nation.
Yeah.
When we get in, when we always go wrong is when somebody interprets the law and takes it upon themselves to enact it in a different way, whether it be a county, a state, a city, and that's part of our problem in our own state, is our county and city and state aren't even in the same place. And we got to be in the same place. And this thing called harmony, it's not sissy talk, it's big boy talk, big it's adult talk.
Takes big people to come to the table on that. And I know that Utah, too, stands out like a little bit of a sore thumb on this because we still allow the firing squad. And anytime it comes up, it's only, every 10, 15, 20 years. But there's a lot of talk about whether that should be happening or not. So I think he's opened the conversation. So 2022, January, February, when the legislature meets, it sounds like this is a conversation we will continue to be having. And it's not the only tough conversation. Utah Senate President Stuart Adams was at the ALEC convention, and apparently some video leaked of that. That was back in May, and on a tape that was released, he said that Donovan Mitchell did not understand state critical race theory resolution. Whether it was taken out of context or not, you could hear him on this video saying that he really would like to educate him. That never plays well, David, to have a white man saying that he wants to educate a black man on critical race theory, even if his intentions were not what it sounded like. What do you think about the issue here, and how do we fix it?
Well, as a brown man being raised in Utah and Utah County, it wasn't easy and it wasn't pleasant, and it was real. And being a kid who grew up in Utah foster care feeling like it didn't belong, I remind myself that there were some in Utah that are just plain racist. But there's more in Utah that are not. And everybody that helped me in my life, I've categorized them by race, and the far majority happen to be white. But it still hurts when somebody tries to tell me that they want to regulate the history that occurred. History is history. We've got a new book out called Latino Leaders Speak by the Latino Leaders Network, which is my brother's organization, and it's 31 chapters of contributions by top Latino leaders that we want to tell the real story. There's being a story that's being told. were not included. And so we want that book in every single library. But you know what? And I almost dare not say this, but now here I go, because I have no filter.
I love it.
Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints can correct some of their history, and I applaud them. Because all of us are simply men and women. We're not perfect. And we are subject to the generational thoughts at the time. And when we can correct it and have a conversation about race in America, we're a better America. And when we try to have a filter of what's going to be in our history books, that divides us even further. And it certainly doesn't make us feel good, people of color.
Yeah, I concur with everything David just said. Where I don't like the narrative from Gordon Monson, the sports writer for the Tribune, who had his own take on this issue, is that we got a culture where there's a power of celebrity. And I'm going to tell you that not a lot of people, rightly so, are not familiar with, and this isn't condescending, this is just reality. People are not familiar with the legislative process. It's why we have a democratically elected republic, because you elect someone to go up there, have the public hearings, do these things. And so our connection to how that process works might not be deep.
Or perfect.
What President Adams was trying to say in that statement was that there was a well-known, very, very popular NBA star who was unhappy with the bill or the resolution that they were passing. And he wanted to make sure that Donovan Mitchell, the NBA star, understood the context and what they were doing and why they were doing it, and educate him on what the bill was actually meant to do. Now, we can say that if you're black and I'm white, I can never say I need to inform you. Yeah. But I would say such broad characterizations of people by color only would be racist in and of itself. Well, these lawmakers have public hearings on every single thing they do, where people of all color and creed come and talk about bills. Well, he was saying, we got to reach out to him. We got to reach out to him and let him at least know the context.
But let me.
I don't want to demonize President Adams for what he said, because I think he was saying, I want to reach out and make sure he understands what we're actually about and what we're trying to accomplish.
David does not agree.
Senator Adams is a good man. I like him, and I've met with him a lot of times. We get ourselves in trouble just by being POWs, prisoner of words. We use the wrong word. We use the wrong phrase, and then it automatically gets interpreted, and the negativism that lives within us, that negative state of mind, we go on the attack instead of saying, hey, what did you mean? The conversation didn't occur, and I'm sure if Donovan and Senator Adams got in the same room, they'd have a good conversation. But what it sounds like is we have some on cable news that say NBA stars just dribble. And so that thought gets carried over into interpreting what someone might say. But in Utah, we are about the most clumsy people on earth to talk about race, because we have not been exposed to a lot of interactions with different kinds of people. You go to California, you go to Washington, you go to Pittsburgh, and we're wondering, like, him and I would have been best friends. We would have never been separated because he's white and I'm brown. That just doesn't exist, but it does in Utah, so it gets exaggerated. Senator Adams is a good guy.
Yep.
And he's a knowledgeable guy, and he's leading, and I think it just got taken into wrong directions.
For me, I look at the world less in terms of color. We know demographics are what they are, but I look at people that are just trying to making their way. It's the little guy, little gal. I don't care race, color, creed. If you're working and you're trying to make a mortgage, raise kids, put food on the table, it's just the everyday people. Yeah. It's hard for me to read a story that would take a person with as much persuasion and, I would argue, power as Donovan Mitchell and make a victim out of him, when the everyday people are struggling every day to make a living, that will never have a conversation with a Senate president or regardless of what color of their skin. So I don't like the way these narratives start to emerge. I just think that, to David's point, people need to talk to each other, do it like adults, eyeball to eyeball, not these narratives that get out.
On the other hand, though, an NBA basketball star should be able to have an opinion, should be able to talk, and should not be told to just dribble. And that's occurring on cable news. So
they live in our communities, in our neighborhoods. We're all going to work. We just have different jobs.
And he's a great guy. He's a good guy. Both caring people. But again, I think that what's been thrown out there and the negative that attracts it, negative attracts more negative, is that we end up with some bizarre conversations and we go, how did we get here? We need to come together. And I wish the two of them would get together and just show people how we can talk to each other, fix something, and be Utahns again.
I think it's so important. I like that you say that we're prisoner of words, because I think social media does that, where you grab a snippet and you don't really understand the context or what's behind it. And it's just words flying back and forth. So I really hope that we can all find someone who thinks different, looks different, acts different than us, and sit down, have a conversation, and realize how much we all have in common.
Not be mad at each other. I'm not mad at him yet.
Why you gotta say yet? Why'd you put the yet in there?
We're actually out of time, but I'm gonna go into overtime because I have you both in the same room where we can talk homelessness issues, which are popping up again. It seems like every time we get to the end of the summer, we move into fall, there's a new concern. Do we have enough housing for our homeless friends here in Salt Lake City, here in Ogden, in St. George? It's not just a Wasatch Front problem, but we're talking about the ballpark neighborhood, and can they and will they take on an overflow shelter at the same time we're having people call in and complain on a regular basis about what they're seeing in daylight hours, scary things at Pioneer Park. I see it across the street from KUTV on Main Street. I'm shocked by some of the things I see. I just want to go home and like scrub my eyeballs out sometimes. David, what do we do right now to solve the problem? We have a new czar of sorts over homelessness in the state. The city has put someone in charge, but I feel like we're still back to square one before Greg Hughes even started working on it.
Well, you know what? We pretty much are. But I tell you what, you know, several of the things. I instead of talking about the mistakes, I want to talk about what do we do from here going forward. The first thing is that one of the things I really just is curious to me, my homeless friends. I think we use the word friend pretty different, because if I seen a friend that was homeless, they'd be in my car and going home with me. I wouldn't accept it. We wouldn't accept it. We wouldn't accept it. We wouldn't accept it. But instead, we put a nice term on it, and so that we feel good when we go home to our warm place. There's a difference between those that are homeless and have nowhere to go and those that want to be in the street. And when we have the folks that want to be in a tent city, and we got to attack that differently. When we have the a place for somebody to go, that's an easy fix.
Yeah.
But the resistant to a shelter, that's not an easy fix. They're two different problems. I believe that our mayor, who I like as a person, I think she's absolutely not equipped to handle this job. Meaning homelessness. And to be ignorant to a subject, what does ignorant mean? Lack of knowledge for a subject. I'm ignorant in a lot of things, but I have a lot of good vice presidents that are not ignorant in the same subject. It's about the ability of a leader to get a specialized talent team around them, that folks that have addressed it and have a formula for it, and to put it into motion. Instead, we've got a city council who tell you, well, my job's just about the budget. Don't call me on lawlessness. Don't call me on homelessness. And it grows and grows. We've got a mayor who will talk about, we're trending in the right direction. Are you kidding me? We got a police chief who's going to tell us, well, you know, perception is reality. Hey, chief, get in the street, because it's not perception. We got real problems. And we're the moment that we recognize them, and I hope this mayor will, because I like her and I want her to succeed. We cannot hope she doesn't. There'll be two more years. We have to succeed. But we succeed when we say we have a problem, and we look for the solution and put it into motion and get rid of the yeah, but brothers and sisters that are going to point out every reason that homelessness is not unique to a metro. It doesn't have to be unique to this metro.
So what, David, step one, what would you do if you were in charge and you were in the mayor's office right now?
Well, the first thing that I'm going to do is change the dialogue between state and county, and mostly state. I think that they could depend on they have to depend.
I accidentally cut us off mid-thought here with David Ibarra. You said that we really have to join together. You said with the county and the state. Why is there a divide there?
Well, the city is like it's not part of the state. And when it comes to, and it's because of the political divide, a Republican and a Democrat, I look at it as a business person, it's a problem. And when you can come together around a table and not just to have dialogue, because if I hear one more, we're going to have another a dialogue, I'm going to throw up. We have to have an action plan, and we've got to get together who's going to do what, how we're going to participate. But first, we got to divide the problem into two parts. One of it is homelessness, and that is about moving people off the street who want to be off the street into a resource center that's real, 9 points of entry, that we have a program to put together so that they can come out in 30, 60, 90 days and go in to affordable housing or housing like the other side village. The other one is more problematic. It's shelter resistant. On that one, there can be no is right to sleep on public space. And at night, we should be able to move folks to a safe place, field house, where they can stay, low entry, you stay there. And if you resist, then you should go to 72-hour lockup, and we have a jail available to us, Oxbow, that has 300-and-something beds, but it's just not manned with personnel. So we already got that facility built. We need to build the overnight stay facilities, and they ought to be next to a resource center, and it shouldn't give you a lot, a peanut butter sandwich, a bologna sandwich. Why do I only get that? Because you're only staying here overnight. And the heck with you, David. Well, I love you. The heck with you, I love you, every day until somebody gains the desire to say, hey, Greg, I kind of like to talk about maybe going into there. Maybe I need change.
Because you can't help someone until they're ready.
Until they have desire, you can't help them. But what we can do is end the lawlessness and the criminal element that has embedded itself in this community and are thriving. We aren't losing our city. We aren't on the way to become Seattle, Portland, and San Francisco. We have joined them, and we've got to recognize it. And I'm sure the rebuttal to me will be, oh, David doesn't get it. You go back to your Excel spreadsheet, and I'll walk the street at night with anybody who wants to walk with me. And I think they'll recognize this is not the Salt Lake City that we grew up in, and we need to get it back.
Yep.
Same plan, or do you have a different plan?
No, it's hard for me to re-engage in this issue because we had worked so hard as a state to work with partners in the city and the county, and it wasn't easy. There were some even public fights as we tried to get this going. What has happened, what was happening before we tried to take it on in the summer of 2017, and what is again happening in our state but happens around the country is somebody, and for some reason, we have, as a population and a people, we are satisfied with warehousing human beings. Mm-hmm. It is the most cruel, it is the most inhumane thing you can do to just warehouse people without mm-hmm. regard to their welfare. And that's mm-hmm. what we do. Mm-hmm. The moment we decide, and that we do, and this isn't a theory, we did this for some time before it all went away. If you can understand the individual story of every single person, if I know they're a veteran and there's veteran resources, we don't have to reinvent it. We have resources. If we know people's stories, if you have AIDS, there's resources for people suffering with AIDS. Everybody has a story, and it's not overwhelming. We had 6,000 to 7,000 people camping out in the summer of 17 in the Rio Grande area. If Google Maps could give you a satellite view of every single street in this country, maybe world, we could drill down and know the personal story of every person. You know who doesn't want you to know their story? Criminals. People that are slinging drugs. Those that want to be out there. Those that have profited mightily off the suffering of others. We have wolves among the vulnerable population who profit on this every second of every day.
Right.
And when we created a safe space and we said, we have laundry facilities and you can get your hair cut and we're going to help you get a state ID. But you just, you know, give us something that with a barcode, you don't even have to tell us your real name. But if you tell us something that helps us know and keep track of who you are and how we're going to help you, we can be better at what we do. People, it was amazing how many people were willing to do that, to have that card. You know who didn't? The criminals.
Yeah.
The people, that was like kryptonite to those that wanted to prey upon them. So we had all these people that were camping along the Jordan River. Mm-hmm. They were there because bottom line, what we found out is they couldn't go through the gauntlet of drug dealers and people offering them balloons of heroin, mm-hmm. because they were miserable, that self-medicating wasn't out of the realm because their lives were in turmoil. But they didn't want to be tempted, so they stayed away and they camped out in other places. If we don't protect people and we don't create resource centers where this isn't your new home, we're not warehousing you here, purposely, the beds aren't enough for everybody, so we need you to move along in 30, 60, 90 days. But there's an urgency to it that requires more resources and more money for those resource centers, which they don't have right now.
Do we have enough beds, though? Because we spent millions of dollars on different resource centers. Yeah, not enough now?
No, well, let me tell you, we never carried the plan through.
Yeah.
The problem is, we knew that we had less beds than we had people, but we weren't trying to build permanent residences. We wanted there to be an urgency that people had to get on their feet and get to
we were going to shrink it.
That wasn't the end game.
We had to move
it.
Yeah, so we had to move people along. But you know what? That's going to cost more than just warehousing people. We didn't fund it appropriately to see that resource center model be successful.
Let me ask you
something. I had to watch that from the outside.
Difficult. Let me ask you this. As a business person, and I am, if you had an entity that was fighting against the opening of a resource center because it would ruin their shelter, would you put them in charge of the resource center?
Not at all.
Not at all.
For 1 second.
And we've done it. And we wonder why we lost the resource center.
Yeah. We've had a lot of, adults fighting over adult systems, sadly, is what a lot of politics is.
The homeless situation
is the same.
Do we need that overflow shelter in the ballpark neighborhood?
Well, not in the ballpark neighborhood for sure. But now, because we're not addressing it, we're not shrinking it, we're not addressing the issues, the nine reasons. I mean, when you look at Gail Miller and Palmer DePaulis, Mayor Palmer DePaulis, and the research they did, I happen to have read it. It was good, but we didn't do anything with it. We started it and didn't finish it. And until we're going to address the cause, the population's going to grow. We ought to have the talent manning these facilities that get incentivize them for shrinking the population.
So you need to get a bonus for empty beds.
Empty beds.
Right.
You get a bonus. You get a bonus if one has to be closed. You get 3 years worth of pay, maybe.
What
would be wrong with that?
We had a legislative audit that showed that when you put somebody into housing, you give them a voucher for 3 months, and then they didn't get on their feet, and they were evicted. When they came back through, they got a new number. And so the homeless in the database, they were
you
brand new.
Track them.
So
yeah.
Now that it looked like you successfully placed someone in housing, but that same person's coming through now. They're getting a different identification number, which again is problematic. I will tell you that until we decide that we want to help people and that we are going to move them through and help them be sustainable, and also at the same time understand that there are just wolves out there that want to prey upon them. The saddest thing I ever saw, and the happiest
Dangerous.
Thing I ever saw, was when I was volunteering and providing meals at lunchtime at St. Vincent's. When I started doing that, when the wolves were still out there and the drug dealers and cartels were running those streets, people would never raise their eyes to look at you to thank you when you took their ticket, when you handed them a tray. You'd ask people to return their trays after they were done. Trays were strewn on the tables. People barely ever would make eye contact. When we created safe spaces and we did not tolerate the lawlessness, people's eyes lifted. They spoke with you. You got to know their names. People were returning the trays to the area they were asked to. Everything, the atmosphere changed. It became brighter. It's hard to have seen that and to see that progress made, to see it crumble before your eyes, and that's what you have right now.
When we look at our leaders, and that news conference was so incredibly pathetic to see two of our leaders, our mayor and the chief, talking like that and reading something they couldn't even read well. Heck, I couldn't read it well. I could never, ever let it part my lips. Because that wasn't true. And the other fact is that was a can't comment. You know, I live by this phrase, and I say it every morning. Some see things as they are and say, why? Woe is me. Others dream dreams that never were and say, why not? Why not me? If I'm going to have somebody in my team and we've got a big project and they proceed to tell me all the reasons that they can't, they're not going to be on my team.
It's the wrong guy for the job.
Yeah, I'm a Mexican, not a Mexicant.
This man means business. He doesn't mess around. That's why I got such high respect for him. But look, you can tell there's a lot of motion in this issue. It's a tough issue.
It is.
We both cut our teeth to some extent in this issue, and it's hard to watch it and see that you're not seeing the potential that is there. You're not seeing it realized.
We need our mayor to succeed. We need our chief to get back to doing his job. We need this. We all lose if she doesn't raise up and take this problem and handle it like any other business individual with experience would. She can. She must. I pray she will.
All right. Hopefully this will be heading in the right direction. Tell your friends to listen. Maybe they can solve some problems by listening to the Take Two podcast. Thank you, both of you, for being here. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends about us and give us a rating.
Thank you. Yeah, that was fun.
I get it.